You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the MLB Pipeline Podcast. I'm Jason Ratliff here with Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo, and it is spring breakout week. Woohoo! We've been, we've been waiting for this for a long time. And games begin on Thursday. A couple games Thursday. What is it? Six Friday? I should know this. I think it's six Friday, seven Saturday, two more Sunday. Does that add up? 13? No, I think I added an extra game somewhere.
Wishful thinking.
16 games total. Every game can be seen on MLB.com. Six of them are on MLB Network, a bunch being carried by your local RSNs. So make sure you're tuning in starting on Thursday to watch these games. Rosters came out since our last episode, and they are, I think, everything we could have hoped they would be. 72 of MLB's top 100 prospects are on the rosters. Nearly two-thirds of every ranked prospect on a team top 30 prospect list is on a spring breakout roster. So they are absolutely packed. And guys, you will be a big part of this. You're calling several games. You'll be at several games. What are you looking forward to most?
I think it's just seeing all these good prospects, you know, compete against each other. You know, I kind of made a comment on MLB Network the other day that it's like having 16 futures games, and it really is. Jonathan, I think, I don't know your schedule as well as I know mine, but I think you get to see Schemes versus Holiday, right, the first day?
I do.
I mean, which is, I don't know if it's anticlimactic since they met in a spring training game, but, like, everybody's all, you know, geared up for that. Like, we don't know that we'll see it, but I think we might get Colson Montgomery versus Cade Horton. Like, it's like all the possibilities are endless. It's just going to be one prospect after another. So I'm just looking for, you know, my favorite part of spring training is the backfields games and watching top prospects play. And now you're getting to see the best of the best compete against the best of the best for another organization.
I love the fact that everyone involved is really into this. I'm really excited for those huge matchups as well. I'm also excited to see which, you know, guy who was in the DSL last summer does something big, you know, in a moment, whether, you know, striking out a big prospect or hitting a homer off of a big pitching prospect or something like that, because it's going to happen invariably across all these games. And, you know, I think all of that is going to be really exciting. Sounds like a lot of teams, a lot of organizations are fired up to try to win the game, you know, so it's going to be really good competition. And I like that line, Jim, the 16 futures games. And everyone I talked to when I was running around spring training, the players, farm directors, it didn't matter, really fired up for this and can't wait for it to happen. So I just, you know, Jason, I know from your perspective, this was, you know, something in your brain and then something that was just on paper. You know, I remember the first year of the futures game back in 1999, believe it or not. I don't remember what happened 2 days ago, but that I remember. But I remember it was this, wow, this sounds like a really cool idea on paper. And so to see it actually sort of come to fruition and happen on the field, I know I'm excited, and I'm not the one who came up with the idea. So I want to know from your vantage point, just how fired up are you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm extremely excited. There have been, you know, it's been a long, it came together actually relatively quickly, but this was an idea that was sort of born a couple years ago now, and to see the steps along the way, to see it unfold and actually come to fruition has been very insightful, you know, very, very enlightening to just see the inner workings of how an event like this actually gets put together. Because normally we're kind of on the other side. We're reporting on these things and not actually, you know, involved in the planning process so much, but it's been, you know, all the logistical hurdles that have been overcome by, you know, a ton of people. And I keep telling people that, you know, having the idea was the easy part, and actually implementing it and seeing the literal hundreds, if not thousands of people that are involved in working on this is truly astounding. But I mean, you know, had you said a year ago when we kind of learned that this was actually going to happen, that we would have the turnout in terms of the prospects that we actually got, you know, I would have been thrilled. Like I said, 72 of the top 100 prospects, 16 out of the top 20. And, you know, if you go down the line, it's basically, like I said, the best case scenario, what absolute best we could have hoped for, because we didn't think we were going to get guys who were, you know, either already big leaguers or vying for big league positions. And so you look at the very top guys that are currently not scheduled to participate. Junior Caminero just got sent down yesterday. Evan Carter, Wyatt Langford, obviously, certainly looking at big league spots there. Colton Cowser, Colt Keith, Kyle Harrison, Ricky Tiedemann, Heston Kerstad. Almost every player is either in the running for a big league spot, already a big leader, big leaguer, or has injury concerns. And those are the only guys that are not participating. And actually, Pete Crow Armstrong got sent down. And my understanding is he got sent down, walked over to the farm director and said, I want to play in the spring breakout game.
Of course he does.
So that was pretty cool. And that gave us 16 out of the top 20 prospects in baseball.
I want to sort of add something I heard anecdotally. So I can't confirm, but I heard, you know, because the Pirates have so many pitching prospects, and, you know, Skeens is pitching, and we're going to see Tamar Johnson in that game against the Orioles. But evidently, like, Pittsburgh media, I don't know if it was radio or it was during a broadcast, were mad that Jared Jones is not in the spring breakout game. Now, I have a sense that it might mean that he's still competing for a rotation spot. I mean, he's close, and they may be wanting to look at him longer. But just I love the fact that, like, people a step or two removed are kind of like, how come Jared Jones isn't in this game? I mean, like, people are really paying attention. I think we're plugging into something because there's so much more excitement about prospects in general, that everyone wants to see all the top guys on the field at once. So I thought that was pretty cool that there were, you know, mainstream broadcasters or big league broadcasters kind of bemoaning the fact that one guy wasn't participating in a game like this.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting the buy-in they've gotten. I mean, Jason, when this idea came up, I mean, obviously it sounded really cool. And I just remember, I mean, I know we all did, we're thinking of the logistical hurdles to pull this off. Like, can they really do this? And I think a lot of the teams are excited about it. I think MLB is really behind it and has encouraged teams to get their best prospects in the game. I know there are, not every team has done this, but I know there are teams that set up their, you know, the schedule of when pitchers throw is mapped out throughout spring training, you know, as you build guys up. And there are teams that set up their schedules so a lot of their top guys would be available to pitch. That would be their day to pitch in a game in the spring breakout game. And it's funny, like, the emphasis is on the prospects and watching these guys. And I was talking to the Angels farm director, Joey Probinsky, yesterday, and I made some comment about, like, results don't really matter. You know, it's going to be cool seeing all these guys on the field. And Joey looked at me and he's like, oh, the results matter. They're playing the Dodgers. He's like, we want to win that game. We're like, we're playing this game to win. I think the teams are getting a little competitive now that it's upon us too. And the cool thing, I think, also is, like, as you were saying, Jason, it's amazing all the people had to get involved to pull the logistics for this off. And I think the first year of doing something this grand is the most difficult. And I kind of think about where the draft combine was in year one and to where it is in year four now. And it's a much more smoothly oiled machine. And it just also, as excited as I am about this year, it makes me wonder, like it could continue to grow and get even better. So, like, where might it be in 3 or 4 years? Because the buy-in in year one is unbelievable. Like you said, almost all the best prospects who aren't here are because they're competing for jobs in big league camp. Like, virtually everybody who's not or didn't just get sent down in the last day or two is going to be playing in spring breakout.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, My hope here is that this will kind of wet everyone's whistle, that, you know, you're going to get just a taste of what this could be if it continues to grow. And, you know, the original idea was for this to be a tournament, a sort of March Madness for baseball. And, you know, and we've heard a lot of talk about, you know, when we talk to people about, what do you think we could do to improve this? And there, a lot of the feedback was make it a tournament. And, you know, people acknowledged the additional logistical hurdles that would come about trying to make it a tournament. But that was the idea initially. And, you know, I'd love to see it get there. And I, you know, I think, you know, Jonathan, you talked about like, oh, people disappointed that Jared Jones is not going to pitch, or, you know, farm director saying like, well, we have to get these guys innings in. So, you know, teams are going to have 10, 12 or more pitchers on the roster, but you may only see a few of them because these guys have to pitch.
Yeah. One, I thought, when I was running around, spring training with one farm director, again, who loved the idea and was sort of just talking about the logistics of it, you know, and that the pitching is probably the toughest thing just to line up if you want everyone to pitch, you know, on the same day, which, as you said, a lot of teams are just going to have three pitchers. I think that's great. Not like this isn't an all-star game, you know, necessarily, and people have to get ready. His suggestion for like version 2.0 at the very least would be like a home and home kind of situation in spring training. So you have two games, because I think you'd be able to schedule enough in advance where you could have all of your good pitching prospects lined up for over 2 days. So you get to see, even if, again, you only use three, maybe four pitchers in a seven inning game, you could, you know, then double that. And so I was like, well, that's a good suggestion to, you know, if we're going to make incremental progress, you know, a full on tournament, which I love the idea of that, does create a logistical hurdle that will have to be cleared. Hopefully we can get there, you know, but for right now, I'm just excited to crisscross the state of Florida, to get to three different games. And Jason, I know that you're not only crisscrossing Florida, and then you're crisscrossing the United States to get to Arizona. So
that's right. That's right.
Exciting.
I said that I hope that this wets people's whistle. Did I mix a metaphor there? Should wet their appetite?
I think you can wet both your whistle and your appetite at the same time.
You have a whistle in your mouth while eating. Okay.
So or maybe one of those like whistle pops that you eat.
There we go. Those will be given out free in all the games. But actually, there will be a set of baseball cards given away at the games. Pretty cool. Each team's number one prospect and a pack of cards being given away at the games. And also, there are autograph sessions at every game, either before or after the game. This thing's going to be very cool.
Awesome. I was talking with some of the prospects about, you know, they had like, it was like, how cool would it be just to have a spring breakout set, you know? So you get like the Orioles spring breakout team in a card set. Like, that would be pretty awesome.
Yeah. More room for growth.
Yes, absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit more about these rosters. And if listeners, if you notice that Jim is being unusually quiet, that's because he's left us. And I meant to mention this when we first started, but Jim is coming to you live from HoHo Camp Park, A's Camp. And he's there, you know, doing the network 30 and 15 spot and doing his camp visit and doing, I think he's off talking to Mason Miller right now. Is that your understanding, Jonathan?
I believe that is who was on the docket. Yes.
Yeah. So he's gone. But hopefully he'll rejoin us here at some point, but maybe not. We'll see. We said that these teams are really, for the most part, sending their best, and kind of broken it down, looking at, you know, which teams are sending which prospects. And, The teams sending the highest number of their top 30 prospects are the Royals and the Brewers, both of whom are sending 24 of their top 30 prospects. And a little background, each team was allowed to set a roster between 23 and 27 players. Now, the Cardinals and the Reds are playing two games, because there had to be an even number of games in both Florida and Arizona so that each team could play. those two teams are being allowed to reset their rosters after game one. So that comes into play when looking at their rosters. But yeah, almost every team is sending about 2/3 of its top 30, which is about all they can send with the, you know, rosters being capped at 27. So, you know, these teams are sending their best. There were five teams sending all 10 of their top 10 prospects. What was it? The D-backs sending 15 of their top 16, you know, across the board, you know, not to belabor the point, but the teams are sending their best prospects, and that's extremely exciting.
Now, it's really something. I mean, you mentioned the Brewers sending 24 of their top 30. You know, all four of their top 100 guys who happen to all be in the top 50 are all playing, including Jackson Churio.
Yeah, that was my surprise.
Like, to see guys like that. I've been a little worried, you know, with each passing day that Jackson Holliday does something more incredible in big league camp. I'm like, ooh, I hope they don't pull him, but I don't think they're going. And, you know, for a hitter, I think it's easier, right? It's, you know, fine. He'll play. It'll be like a split squad game, but you worry about it. But so far those guys are staying, and it is amazing to see. You know, I ran around Arizona for, you know, 11 camps, and like looking at the Cubs, and I wrote up the Cubs spring training report, and I talked to Pete Crow Armstrong, you know, on the network. And then to see that he, like, as you said, you like went to the farm director and asked to play in the game. So he is. And they have six of their seven top 100 guys playing. Michael Busch, who's going to be on the opening day roster, is, you know, in all likelihood is the only one not going to be playing in the game. And this is with, you know, PCA being in big league camp, Matt Shaw being impressive in big league camp. You know, all these guys got a lot of big league time, but they're representing, and top to bottom, the amount of talent that we're going to see. I wish I could go to all 16, you know, all of the games, but that's not actually possible, I don't think.
It is possible to watch them all, though.
It is.
So we put together a list. We ranked the top 10 rosters. Sam Dykstra wrote a story. You can find that on MLB.com/pipeline. His top 10 goes like this. Number one is the Padres. Number two, the aforementioned Brewers. Number three, the Cubs. Number four, the Pirates. Number five, the Nationals. Number six, the Red Sox. Number seven, the Orioles. Number eight, the Twins. Number nine, the Mariners. And number 10, the Rockies. And it's, you know, kind of interesting to look at how that matches up to our recently released farm system rankings, which we'll delve into a little bit later. But Jonathan, you talked about the Brewers a little bit already. Padres, they have a 65 overall grade, a 60 overall grade on their roster. And when you look at the average overall grades break down, they have the highest average overall grade of all the players that on their roster, higher than any other team. And the Brewers are second. Basically, all the teams that rank in the top nine or eight rank in Sam's top 10. As far as the best rosters assembled, and he stuck to that pretty closely, which makes sense.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. I mean, you listen, the Padres, just to see Ethan Salas alone, and yeah, we could have seen him, you know, on MILB.TV games, but you know, I was thinking back to a year ago, being in Padres camp and you know, excited about the fact that he was going to start the year stateside, as you know, skipping over the DSL, and then watching him go all the way to AA, to see him. This was sort of more kind of a national showcase, larger stage kind of thing, along with the rest of this talented organization. And they're even letting Leodalis DeVries play. He just signed in January.
Yeah, only player from the 2024 signing class.
Yeah, and he's already in the United States. I think he's not going to – I can't imagine he's going to follow the same path as Ethan Salas in terms of – multiple stops, but I do think he's going to skip over the Dominican Summer League at the very least. So I think, you know, the Padres doing that's exactly what this what this should be about. You know, I want to see, you know, Ethan Snelling combined Ethan Salas and Robbie Snelling into one person, which would not be fair. Wow. But I want to see Ethan Salas and Robbie Snelling, you know, as a battery. And then I want to see a guy like DeVries on the field. I mean, and see how he does against guys who are 6 years older than he is or whatever, you know, whatever it is. I mean, that's a big part of the fun for me.
Yeah. And actually, Jonathan, I was talking to Sam about this earlier. I can't remember whether I mentioned this to you and Jim as well, but the second youngest player on a roster is Eduardo Tate of the Phillies, and they're playing the Tigers, who have two of the three oldest players on rosters, including the oldest in Jake Higginbotham, who's 28 years old and a left-handed pitcher, as is Adam Wolf, also a lefty. It's 27. So yeah, you could potentially see Eduardo Tate, 17 years old, facing 28-year-old Jake Higginbotham in that Phillies Tigers game. And actually, you know, I was looking at that because I was looking at the list of the 10 youngest players on spring breakout rosters. And it's really interesting. I mean, for one, those 10 players hail from seven different countries, the Dominican, Panama, the U.S., Bahamas, Mexico, Venezuela, and Uganda. And, you know, that leads me to, you know, one of the players I'm most interested in seeing, and who knows who's going to actually pitch, but David Matoma from Uganda, 18 years old, you know, one of a few players from Uganda who's signed recently, pitched, I think, 16 and two-thirds innings last year in his pro debut, did not allow a run, but he's on the Pirates spring breakout roster. And also, when you look at that list of the youngest players, what really jumped out to me is the fact that they all have ETAs of, you know, 2027, 2028, but Ethan Salas is the fourth youngest player. And, you know, his ETA is 2025. And I think we've talked about it on this podcast. Like, if you saw him in the big leagues this year, it wouldn't be the most shocking thing in the world. But just to kind of put in perspective just how fast his fast path is.
No, it's insane. You know, think of him as an upper level player, given how young he is. And Matoma's really interesting. You know, I do the Pirates top 30, and he is definitely on the radar. It was sort of a keep an eye on him because he's got a really live arm. He throws really hard, but he hasn't pitched outside of the Dominican Summer League. And you know, I think it's exciting to have a guy. I hope he gets to pitch, even if he comes in to face a batter. I mean, you know, I want to see him face somebody because no one's really seen him. And I think it would be great for, you know, the Pirates organization and for Ugandan baseball in particular, to be able to show off a potential top prospect, you know, in a showcase like this and give a boost to the Baseball Federation there.
Jim's back. Welcome back, Jim.
Thank you. It's like, you know, Jonathan can attest to this. It's the coolest part, besides seeing the backfield players, is just seeing players that you've talked to in the past. And like yesterday, I'll digress for a second. I had a great time. I interviewed Nolan Schanuel for MLB Network, but I also ran into Zach Neto, and we talked about how my school tried to hire his school's baseball coach in the offseason. I saw Zach Neto, saw Reed Detmers, saw friend of the show podcast, Logan Ohapi, who was great in the fall league. And then right before I had to jump off interview Mason Miller, who was great to talk to, Zach Galoff came over. He's like, I got to say hi to you. He was telling Sandy Charles Bruce, I got to say hi to Jim, because he still remembers his first college game was on during the MLB 4 tournament. We broadcast MLB Network. And he says his dad is my biggest fan because that day I watched BP, and I didn't know who Zach Galoff was, and he was just crushing in BP. And so I was raving about how good he looked in BP and interesting freshman. They hit three doubles in the game. So Zach told Sandy he couldn't, even though I was podcasting with you guys at the time, he had to come over and give me a little fist bump. So anyway, good seeing players. Mason Miller is fascinating, keeps throwing harder, going to be a closer this year. That interview will be out later today on MLB Network. But now, is this the first time we've ever done a double, like, coincide? I'm doing stuff for MLB Network / podcasting simultaneously. Am I breaking new ground here?
I think you are. I know we've done the podcast from, say, the draft, but yeah, I no one's ever had to break away for other obligations during the podcast.
Are you writing a story at the same time? You're a triple threat.
Yeah, that's right. I'll be working on the spring report for the A's in a little bit, but not. I will not try to interview Ed Sprague while doing the podcast. You have my full attention for the rest of the show.
All right. So, last thing on spring break. I didn't even say that we have a guest on the show today, and he's going to be playing in spring breakout, and that's Cole Young, the number one prospect of the Mariners from Jonathan's hometown. You call that your hometown now, Jonathan?
I mean, I've been here 22 years. I think that's fair.
Is Mason Miller from the Pittsburgh area too, Jonathan? I believe he is, right?
Mason Miller is a Pittsburgher, yes.
Wow. Yes, there you go.
But yeah, we should take a break here and talk to Cole Young. But I did want to mention a couple more things on spring breakout. We were talking about the roster breakdown and 20 different countries represented, 46 different states the players hail from. So, you know, got people from all over the world playing in this thing. And just wanted to mention that, you know, we get underway on Thursday. There's a story that Sam Dykstra did on the best matchups, both on a team level and a individual level. But on day one, a couple of the best matchups just in terms of the farm systems. The only two games that pit two top 10 farm systems, both occur on day one. Jim, you'll be on the call on the first ever spring breakout broadcast. And then Jonathan, shortly thereafter, will be part of that fantastic Orioles-Pirates matchup broadcast. So,
and I think we're getting, Jason, I think we're getting Rhett Lauder in that game. Like, I know the pitching, we're not sure who we're getting in these games, but I was in Reds camp the other day and Rhett Lauder is lined up to pitch in that game. So that'll be, you'll get to see the top two pitchers from last year's draft on the first day of spring breakout with Paul Skenes and Rhett Lauder.
Very nice. I mean, yeah, I mean, so far, you know, Skenes starting now, Lauder, Tink Hentz scheduled to start for the Cardinals. We know Noble Meyer and Thomas White are scheduled to throw. So it sounds like all the big arms are going to go. So that's exciting. All right. Well, a big bat that we'll see in spring breakout is, as I mentioned, Cole Young. Jonathan had a chance to stop in and chat with him. We'll listen to that coming up next on the MLB Pipeline podcast.
It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. As we're recording this, my last day in sunny Arizona for spring training in Peoria, Mariners camp. Of course, I had to get a guy from the Berg, Cole Young, joining me right now. Cole, thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Before we started recording, I was asking you how much time you spent back at home in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's a tough place to be a baseball player. You know, how has that sort of made you appreciate, you know, when you come out here and with the exception of the other day when we had a little bit of rain, like the sun is always out and, you know, do you like to laugh at people who complain that it's cold out here?
Yeah, so yeah, spent the whole off season in Pittsburgh and definitely wasn't warm in the off season, so I was training indoors a lot, but whenever I go outside, it was freezing. So coming here in the spring, it's like it's beautiful. Even though it could be like 60 degrees, I know some people think that's really cold, but no, I really this weather's perfect, and I enjoy it every single day.
I guess when you get to Seattle and people are talking about the rain, you'll be like, yeah, I kind of grew up with that.
Yeah, I know Seattle, like the weather's a tiny bit different. Like it rains a lot more, but I'm used to the cold weather and I'm not gonna lie, I kind of like rain. Like, I don't mind it. So,
if you don't like rain and you're from Pittsburgh, then you got to move. I guess you know that we actually get more inches of rain in Pittsburgh than Seattle gets annually.
I didn't know that. That's crazy.
I'm here to inform you.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks. I guess it's more of like a sprinkled type rain. So yeah.
Right, and we get the downpour. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Let's focus on baseball. People don't want us to talk about the climate in Pittsburgh the whole time. You know, I think by just about every account,
your first full season was as successful as I think anyone could hope for. What were some of the things you're like, yeah, that went really well? And what were some of the things you headed into that offseason saying, like, all right, this is what I need to do to keep moving up?
Yeah, so I think the thing that went well last year is I stayed healthy and I learned as much as possible. I learned what my body needs each season. I was able to go out every day, pretty much hit leadoff, get around 5 at-bats each day, and kind of just learn different approaches of what works for me. And I think that's a good foundation to have first year, just staying healthy and playing all those games. And what I really worked on the off season is just having a consistent approach, consistent swing, and I feel like I can do more damage at the plate too. And yeah, because like last year, my first home run was like, I didn't come till like first week of June, which was, yeah, it wasn't good. But yeah, I definitely feel like I can hit the ball for a lot more power. And also feel like now that I know how the day-to-day stuff works, I'll feel like I'll be in a better spot this year.
I think it's the thing a lot of people talk about, that especially that first full season. You've never played 140 games in a row, you know, basically in a row. Was there that time where you hit that sort of proverbial wall and then you had to kind of learn how to, one, perform when you're not feeling great, and two, push through that to finish strong?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like kind of like middle of May, it hit me. It was like the season's so long. You just got to take a step back and enjoy each day and find a good routine that works for you. I feel like once I did that and just, you know, relax a little bit, I was able to do a lot better. But yeah, that definitely hit like a nice little wall in May, slowed down a little bit, but I was able to learn from it, which is good.
You also, if I'm remembering correctly, you earned a promotion, right? You got moved up. Was that something that you're like, kind of set a goal, like, I, you know, I don't want to stay? Not that there's anything wrong for a high school kid to stay at one level for first full year, but what was that like to get that phone call or to be told that you're moving up, and what did you see in the differences between the levels?
Yeah, I was really glad I got moved up, because yeah, it just, you know, I didn't want to be in Modesto all like the full year, and you know, middle of June, it was kind of just, I don't know, going through the motions kind of type thing, and I just thought I was going to be there the rest of the year. But yeah, once I got moved up, definitely you know, a lot more motivation, and you know, it kind of just hits you that you just keep working hard every single day, and you know, you don't know what can happen. But yeah, like I would say it's just, I feel like the game gets a little faster like every level we move up. Once you adjust to it, it's just, you know, you just play the game of baseball and each game is the same.
You sort of talked about the consistency of getting through that season and consistency of at-bats. One of the things that sort of always impressed me from, you know, in high school is that you had that feel to hit and that approach that sometimes doesn't come till later. And I think maybe a little surprising to outsiders for a guy from a cold weather area where you're not out playing all the time. Where did that come from? When did you sort of realize that was... I don't want to say your carrying tool, because I don't want to take away from your other tools, but that was a thing that I think jumped off the page even as you're getting ready for the draft.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've always been a pretty good hitter, and whenever I go up to the plate, I battle, I compete, and I don't really like swinging at balls. Obviously, it's not good, but you know, I've always battled at the plate. I've always been competitive, and I feel like I've always, you know, been a pretty good hitter. So I try to just take that confidence every single day to the field, and yeah, I don't want to give away at bats.
Did you always hit left-handed? I mean, you know, everyone like loves to talk about, like, well, you have a left-handed hitting middle infielder. Like, that's that's a hot commodity, right? In baseball circles. Was there a point that you switched to that, or was that just something naturally you started hitting that way?
Yeah, I just always hit lefty, and pretty much always played shortstop. So yeah, I mean, ever since I can remember, I hit lefty, and I wanted to be an infielder. So.
You talked to mention about that, like, you feel like you can impact the ball more, and you didn't get that first homer for June. Power's often the last thing to come. Do you feel like coming into camp this year that, like, how much more physical and stronger you are compared to, you know, even last year at this time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like I had a really good off-season program this year. I think a lot of it could be, you know, swing mechanics too, and just having a consistent swing that you can just take to the field every single day, which is, that helps a lot. But this off season, I really made sure to get stronger, eat healthy, making sure my body feels good. you know, I feel like since I did that, I'll be in a good spot.
So not a whole lot of Primanti sandwiches in the off season.
No, I actually think I had one though, one or two maybe.
I think that's all anyone should ever have. Yeah, whether you're a baseball player.
Yeah, or not. Actually, I did have a couple though.
That's fair. That's fair. You burn it off quickly than some of us do. So that's right. I wanted to ask you about your defense also. You said you've always played shortstop. You know, when you get to the pro game, often it's, you know, whether you're going to play shortstop in the big leagues or not, being comfortable someplace else. What has that been like, just sort of playing some second base, knowing that, like, that could be your ticket to the big leagues, depending on what's going on in the major league roster when you're ready?
Yeah, I mean, I'll do whatever it takes to, you know, make the roster. Yeah, I feel like I've made a lot of improvements in the infield the past year. Bone, Perry Hill, he's been really helping me a lot this spring. And, you know, I've learned a lot at second base, and I played a lot of shortstop last year, which helped too. But yeah, I feel like I can play pretty much anywhere in the infield, and I feel comfortable with it.
I mean, you're pretty blessed that Perry is maybe one of the greatest infield coaches of all time, so you can put your trust in him, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. He's awesome.
Yeah, one of the things I've been talking to people around here is just, you know, the last 3 years now, the Mariners have taken a high school hitter in the first round, and then even last year's draft, they added on to that. What has it been like? You know, you had Harry in front of you, but now you have Colt Emerson, who's like another cold weather, middle of the country, high school infielder, in his first spring training. Like, what has the bond been like, you know, among the three of you? And I would imagine you and Colt especially, since your backgrounds and your positions are so similar.
Yeah, we learn a lot from each other. Just being high school draft picks, we learn a lot from each other. We're all friends with each other, and we just, you know, help each other out. And I feel like it's a really good relationship that we have. Because they got three first-round picks last year. And, I think we all kind of just, you know, watch each other, see our routine and everything. And I think it's good that, you know, we're kind of all in the same spot. And, we all just want to get better and, you know, improve as teammates and players and everything like that.
How do you, like, try not to get ahead of yourself? Because you want to get to Seattle. And, you know, you jumped on a slightly faster track by earning that promotion. And the Mariners clearly don't hesitate to move, you know, the young guys as they're ready. Do you have to, like, make sure you stay grounded and not think, all right, well, I'm into high A, you know, if I can get to double or triple it, you know, like, just sort of that whole cliche of, you know, keeping your feet where they are kind of thing?
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, I mean, obviously you can't really think about that stuff. I feel like the biggest thing for me is just keep working hard and just staying humble. And I know if I do those two things, then I'll be in a good spot. So that's what I've been doing this spring, and I want to continue that throughout my career.
Have you gotten into many games on the big league side, and what's that experience been like, just being able to sort of pick the brains of the J.P. Crawfords of the world?
Yeah, I think it's sweet. I feel like I've been to a lot of the games so far. I probably had like 16, 17 at-bats so far, but I think the biggest thing is just practicing with them and just seeing how they go about their business. Like J.P., fielding ground balls, he's a gold glover, so watching him take infield is definitely a really cool opportunity to get, and I've learned a lot from this spring.
Who are some of the guys, you know, just in, you know, in your time as a pro, that some of the pitchers who you've been really impressed with? This is a Jim Callis special question. He loves asking guys, like, who's a guy that you face, or who's a guy, like, you really would love to face? But let's start with on the prospect side. Who are guys that, you know, at either level, you're like, oh, this guy is living up to what I had heard about him?
Robbie Snelling. Yeah, we faced him second week in low A last year. He's really good. Definitely a good one.
He was our podcast guest last week, so you're following that up really, really nicely.
Okay.
What about him was particular? I would imagine for a lefty, I mean, he gets
all
hitters.
Yeah, left and left's a little tough. I think his fastball's like 95, 96. Got some ride to it. He's got a slider, too, that's pretty nasty. He's just a really good pitcher.
Last thing I want to ask you about is the spring breakout games coming up next week. I mean, you've played in, you know, all the showcases. You've been on the field with a lot of good talent at the same time. Maybe the futures game is coming for you for this year. But what do you think about this idea of, like, being able to take the field with a roster full of guys like you up and down? Well, it's a pretty deep system, I think. And being able to sort of, it's just a one game thing, obviously, but to be able to look up and, you know, up and down the dugout and on the mound, that it's like all prospects in this organization.
I think it's such a good idea. I think it's going to be amazing. I think it's going to be really cool. I'm kind of surprised we haven't done it in the past. Like, I think this is, I hope it happens every single year after this year. So I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a really cool experience. So I'm excited.
All right, Cole, thank you very much for your time. Good luck this season.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right, we'll be right back with more on the MLB Pipeline Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Jason Ratliff here with Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo. Thanks very much to Cole Young for taking the time to talk to Jonathan. He's obviously excited about spring breakout, and that's been...
Loves it.
Yeah, I mean, that's been one of the great things, is just hearing all the players talk about it. And, you know, not that when you're interviewing a player, he's going to, you know, have publicly say bad things about about what you're asking him about. But, like, it's been pretty much unanimous that the players are, like, legitimately and clearly authentically excited about it. So that's been fun.
I think there's a, you know, the difference between... All right, I'm not going to badmouth the event and effusive praise. You know, it was audio only, but like when I asked Cole Young about it, he had a huge grin on his face and he was just, you know, I hope people heard it. It came through in how he was talking about it. It was not just, oh, I'm going to say the right things. So he was like, I hope it happens every year. I mean, he was really, really excited about it. So it was beyond just sort of, you know, checking off the boxes you're supposed to check off in an interview.
Yeah, besides, I just realized, too, some of these younger guys will probably play in multiple spring breakout games.
Here's hoping.
Like, you might have a guy who played two or three. And, like, you know, Rhett Lauder, same thing. Like, he has to go from Goodyear to Surprise. I mean, it's nothing's far away out here. But, like, it's a road game. But he was, you know, he's just gotten out of big league camp. He'd just been sent down to minor league camp. And Rhett was really excited about getting the opportunity to pitch against the Rangers. So I think that's been the coolest thing, like we said a couple times, is just the enthusiasm. And you have guys like Pete Armstrong, as soon as he gets sent down, you know, wanting to play in the spring breakout. We need to get Junior Caminero in the spring breakout. Somebody needs to talk to Junior Caminero and get him to request being in the Rays game at this point.
No, don't think we have not looked into that. All right, let's talk farm system rankings, because, man, what a week. I mean, normally any one of the things that have happened over the past week with team top 30 lists being announced, spring breakout rosters being announced, new farm system rankings, like any one of those things would be like easily the biggest news of the week for us, and we packed it all into one week. But the farm system rankings, in case you missed it, came out late last week, and some pretty big changes, maybe not from last year's midseason list, but if you go back a year ago to the 2023 preseason list, there have been some pretty significant changes. And Jim, before we start talking about those changes, I mean, you should probably give your preamble about why these rankings are important.
We should just have this recorded. Because I say the same thing every year, and I write the same entry. But no, but like I've said, like they're difficult to do. You're rating, you know, 200 players in one system is 200 in another, and there's a lot of volatility in how players turn out. But if you go back and look, traditionally, and this goes back to my days at Baseball America, the team that ranks the number one farm system almost immediately or within a couple years is becomes a playoff team and has sustained success. I don't have the year in front of me because I'm sitting here at Hoho Camp Park just in the stands. The one exception, like going back to when I started ranking farm systems in 1989 and BA was doing it before that, there was a Pirates team in the 90s that was number one that didn't turn the ranking into success. But everybody else, it's been pretty crazy. And at MLB Pipeline, we've been ranking prospects since the beginning of 2015. and these are our number one farm systems. First one was the Cubs. They win the World Series next year, set a franchise record with four straight playoff appearances. mid-2015 was the Red Sox. They win the World Series a couple years later. They tied a franchise record with three straight playoff appearances. The Dodgers won the 2020 World Series. They're in the midst of 11 straight playoff appearances. That's a record. Brewers haven't won a World Series, but they set a franchise record for plus four straight playoff appearances. The Braves won a World Series. They made six straight playoff appearances. And then most recent teams, White Sox, okay, they haven't won the World Series. They set a franchise record. There's only two straight playoff appearances, but that's a franchise record. The Padres made the playoffs twice in 3 years, which is the second best period in franchise history. The Rays, they're in the midst of a record five straight playoff appearances. And the Orioles, I think we're probably going to be talking about the Orioles likely winning a World Series the next couple of years, but they just won 101 games last year, their most in 44 seasons. So, like, while it's difficult to do, and I'll make my standard joke about how one team thinks we got it right and 29 teams think we have them ranked too low, the teams, and I think if you look at other people's farm system rankings, we usually agree. Most people, I think there's a consensus who the number one farm system is, and that farm system almost always pays dividends. I mean, you can take that to the bank.
Yeah, I was going to say, Jim, maybe only 28 teams this year think they're ranked too low, because do you think that, I mean,
I don't know, because Jared Banner is now the assistant GM, the former farm director of the Cubs, always gives me a hard time about where we have their guys ranked and where we have the system ranked. I have not been to Mesa. I'm just telling you.
I didn't ask that question when I was there.
I did a Cubs podcast, and I wondered, I think Jared's going to say, hey, look, we got seven top 100 prospects more than anybody else, and we have plenty of depth. We should be number one. So when I see Jared, I'm going to ask him. I will stick with my 29 teams think we have them too low until Jared tells me otherwise, that he believes the Orioles are better than the Cubs, and I don't think he's going to tell me that, as good as the Orioles are.
All right, you're doing that Cubs-White Sox game this week, so there's your opportunity.
I plan on asking him, because he always gives me a hard time, and I think he will say we should be number one. So.
On air, hopefully. Let's make that an on-air interview.
I think we're going to have him in the booth, Jason Chancellor, so we'll see.
There you go. So, yeah, the top five in our farm system rankings, Orioles, Cubs, Brewers, Padres, Tigers. Let's go ahead and give you the full top 10. Rays, Rangers, Dodgers, Pirates, and Reds rounding out the top 10. But as I stated earlier, a lot of change from between 2023 preseason and 2024 preseason rankings. Those two through five teams, Cubs ranked 12th a year ago. The Brewers, now three, were 15 a year ago. The Padres had dropped all the way down, not last year preseason, but mid-season of 2022. It dropped all the way down to 28. And even last year preseason, they were 23. And then the Tigers jump all the way from 25 a year ago to five now. Guys, those are some very significant jumps.
Yeah, I think this is a volatile list in general, just because of graduations, trades, you know, how teams do in the draft, international signings. The pendulum can shift in a hurry, especially as teams kind of switch back and forth between win now mode and rebuilding mode. You know, that can happen. That window can close pretty quickly at the big league level. So I don't think it's that surprising for there to be, you know, big shifts, but I think it is really interesting to have so much of the very, very top of these rankings have come so far in such a short amount of time.
You know, the interesting thing, Jonathan, I mean, a lot of times when you see that volatility, it's like a team, their contention window's closed, and okay, we're trading veterans for prospects, and we got to rebuild. What's interesting with the Cubs, the Brewers, and the Padres were all trying to win last year. Like, it wasn't like they gave up and were trading for a bunch of prospects. They're like, they had a good year, like you mentioned, the various factors, but like, they acquired prospects via Draft International. I think those three systems have a lot in common is they had a lot of guys who were already in the system take positive steps forward. And even the Tigers are, you know, they weren't contending last year, but I think, you know, the AL Central is wide open and the Tigers are trying to win. It wasn't like the Tigers last year were selling off parts left and right. So that was the thing that jumped out at me, is that you don't have that, you know, like the White Sox, who rank 18th on the list. The White Sox improved their farm system because they committed to a total rebuild at midseason and traded guys left and right. But, you know, they aren't a top system. So I think that's what's kind of unusual about this year, is these teams that have made the jump were actually trying to, you know, a lot of them were trying to win last year too, and just had really good years in terms of, you know, drafting and signing international guys and developing what they had.
I think we'll cut Jim a little slack because he's wandering around A's camp, but the White Sox are actually 20th on the list.
They should have been 18th. Should have been 18th.
Move them up. Oh, he just updated the list.
I'm updating the list as we go.
Updating as he's walking. He needed another thing to do since, you know, he's showing off now. I think those are really good points. And I think we also want to make sure we don't forget to talk a little bit more about the Orioles. We talk about them all the time, but 6 straight number one rankings is insane. And we've talked so often about how difficult it is to win at the big league level and continuously have a good farm system. You know, we've seen the Dodgers do it, the Rays now with the run that they've had and continuing to have a highly ranked system, but it's hard. And we know that the Orioles are kind of getting to this point where, they traded Joey Ortiz for Corbin Burns, but they're not going to have room for everybody in their system who's really good at the big league level. So it'll be interesting to see what they do to make room, either trade prospects away or trade big leaguers away to help the big league club out and make room for some of those prospects. But whether or not they can continue this run at the top, I think will be really interesting to see. It's still a pretty deep system as well, and guys keep stepping up every year to go from, oh, that guy's interesting, like the Samuel Basayos of the world, to one of the better prospects in all of baseball. And it's been fun to see what they've been able to do. And as Jim, you pointed out, then turning it into 100 wins last year and probably a lot more success to come in the coming years.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you consider, like you said, Jonathan, they have more good, really good young players than they have spots in their lineup. They have new ownership coming in that looks like they'll probably spend more than the current ownership. Like, they could go out and acquire some, players, whether it's through trades or free agency. And it's still, I mean, I cannot ever remember. I'm old, so, like, I can now have my 3 decades of coverage. Although, you got to be close to 3 decades now, Jonathan, don't you?
No comment.
Okay. Anyway, my more than 3 decades of covering this stuff, I can never remember a team having I don't know how many teams have had like the number one overall prospect 3 times in that whole period, but to go from Hadley Rutschman to Gunnar Henderson to Jackson Holliday in such a short period of time to have the best prospect in baseball be 3 different guys is unprecedented. And during that time too, they had Grayson Rodriguez, who at one point was the best pitching prospect in baseball. And they just keep coming. And, the interesting thing will be now that they're not picking at the very top of the draft, are they going to be able to – I don't know if they'll be able to sustain having the number one prospect in baseball basically all the time. But, I mean, they do good work with lower round picks. Samuel Basayo was not a big-time international guy.
And Kobe Mayo was it was in the COVID draft. He was overpaid, but still.
Yeah. I mean, they do good work, and they've been creative in the draft, moving money around. And I think they have a really good infrastructure, both in terms of scouting and player development. So, their reign as the number one farm system, you look at who their prospects this year, a lot of those guys are going to graduate. So it'll probably come to an end by mid-season, perhaps. But I do think they're going to be a very formidable big league team for a long time and continue to be formidable in scouting and player development.
Well, guys, the one area that I see where you have not learned your lesson is the Astros are ranked. What are the Astros ranked?
Yeah, they're 27th, which is 27. The highest. That's the highest we've ranked them since we started ranking all 30 organizations 4 years ago.
They continue to churn out valuable big leaguers, and there they are again. And I mentioned this to you guys over the past week or so, but I broke down each team's average signing bonus for its top 30 prospects, and the Astros have the lowest of any organization with an average of $705,000 for signing bonus for a top 30 prospect, juxtaposed to the highest by far, the Nationals at $2.1 million on average. But yeah, Jim, you got them ranked down there. Isn't somebody in that organization giving you trouble?
Not trouble. It's good nature. They kind of chuckle over it because like everybody ranks them low, and they've been to what, the ALCS 7 years in a row, and they've had rookie of the year votes in the last 5, and they don't have a single prospect on the top 100. And it's funny. It's the reason their bonuses are so low. Part of it is they didn't have first round picks or second round picks for a couple of years as a penalty for the sign stealing scandal. I think one of the ways people don't recognize how the sausage is made is that at least initially in rankings, your prospect pedigree does matter. And the Astros are continually picking at the bottom of the first round, if they're even picking in the first round. They do have two guys they drafted 2 years ago who are in the top 100 prospects list. They just traded them both to the Mets for Justin Verlander last year. But it's hard because they don't have these big-time guys, and they don't have guys who are necessarily just, you know, tearing it up. But what they do, like, they have a very specific profile they look for. I mean, I'm oversimplifying here, but they look for guys, and they're not the only team that does this, but they look for guys. They prioritize guys who hit the ball hard over probably everything else, that and plate discipline. And then from the pitching standpoint, like, if you read my scouting reports on the Astros, it seems like almost every one of their guys has a low release height and, like, very good extension and, you know, creates tremendous carry and the ball gets on hitters really fast. And I'm oversimplifying things, but, like, they're very good at knowing what they're looking for and then making those guys better. And we're going to see it again this year. Like, Spencer Arrighetti and Joey Loperfido, who are in their top 10 but aren't, like, household names in the prospect world, are probably going to come up and make contributions, and they're probably going to go to the ALCS again. And, you know, Jacob Melton, I think, will sneak on to the top 100 when we have some graduations early in the season. And he's a guy who hit 23 homers and stole 46 bases, and apparently his underlying metrics are better than his baseball card numbers even. But they kind of chuckle about it, and I think – they don't so much give me a hard time. They kind of laugh at me because I have so much angst about it. Like, I always have to preface it with, like, I don't even understand why we keep doing this. Like, I don't know what the solution is. But, like, you know, like I said, I mean, they have all these unheralded guys. And then you look up and they're pitching in their rotation in the ALCS. Or Chaz McCormick comes out of the 21st round and winds up being a really good player. Like, they have a ton of examples like that.
I think the real reason he doesn't get grief is that they change their front office enough that it's different people. It takes them a little while to catch up that Jim hates on them.
Well, I don't know. Chris Gross is maybe with the Mets, but Gavin Dickey was giving me, sticking the needle in me good naturedly a little bit this offseason. So, it keeps happening. And like I said, I don't feel like there's anything wrong with our process, Jonathan. And you and Sam are to blame for this also. It's not just me ranking the Astros, although I am our Astros gatekeeper.
I don't know what you're talking about.
When we do the Farb Sisters rankings. But I don't feel like our process is wrong. And again, I'd feel, I guess, worse if Baseball America and ESPN had them ranked 15th or something. But nobody ever ranks them high, and they keep churning out good big leaguers. So, if you talk to the Astros, the way they'd sum it up is they'd rather be ranked low and have success
and win,
developing players and win than have a high-ranked farm system but struggle to get players to the big league. So they kind of chuckle over it, but it's crazy, and I don't even know what the solution is. Like maybe we just have to say wherever we rank the Astros, we need plus 10 or plus 12 or something. Yeah, like we just need an automatic adjustment. That's the only thing I can think of.
All right, those full farm system rankings are up on MLB.com/pipeline. Check them out there. We have a question in the mailbag about some prospects on one of the teams that are down there in the Astros range, and actually the lowest ranked farm system in 2024, the Angels. Evan, at Evan Killings, K-I-L-L-I-N-X, says, thoughts on Caden Dana and Nelson Rada?
Well, Jim, you were, you know, the Angels are my team, but you just were in Angels camp. So, you know, if you want to go first, you can.
Yeah, I'll tell you all you can elaborate, because you know these guys a little better than me. But, you know, Nelson Rada is really interesting, as you know, Jonathan. Like, the Angels have one top 100 prospect right now, Nolan Schanuel, and he's going to graduate like 2 weeks into the season. Like, he's already, you know, we've talked about him. First guy from last year's draft to make the big leagues, played 29 games. He's going to open the season the number two spot in their lineup. And he's going to come off leaving them without a top 100 prospect in, you know, by mid-April. But I think Nelson Rada has a very good chance to get on there. He's one of the youngest players in the Cal League last year, led the league in steals. Not a pure blazer. He's not Victor Scott by any means, but he's just a really instinctive player. He's good instincts at the plate, good approach, good instincts on the bases, good instincts in center field. And I think he's probably their next top 100 prospect. And Caden Dana is the best pitching prospect in the system. He's going to start their spring breakout game against the Dodgers, which I think is on Saturday. He's starting that game, and he's interesting. He was a high school pitcher a couple of years ago, set a record in the 11th round of the draft. He signed for, I think it was $1.4975 million. $1.5 million basically minus the $2,500 accounting trick that some of the teams do. And, you know, they kind of took it easy with him last year. He pitched about 60 innings. It's solid fastball slider combination. And I think he's a guy who can make a big jump this year, Jonathan. I think, you know, especially high school pitcher, first year in pro ball, kind of have the training wheels on a little bit. You don't want to pile too much of workload, but I think, you know, the training wheels are coming off, and Kaden Dana could be on the rise this season as well.
Yeah, that's, you know, Jason, you mentioned that they are the lowest ranked farm system. These two are interesting in how young they are and how they handled their assignments last year. I mean, you hit Rotta right on the head, Jim. You know, he's really exciting. He needs to add some strength, you know, so there's a little more impact. I don't think he's ever going to be a huge power profile, but he does a lot of things well. And his feel to hit, and it's just feel for the game and the instincts he has, kind of belie his years. And he started off slowly last year in A-ball and then kind of figured things out and was really, really good. And you mentioned the stolen base total. He can really play center field. And then Kaden Dana, it's kind of a really interesting combination of size and projection and feel for pitching, you know, which you don't always get. Sometimes you have those guys and they're throwers and not pitchers, but he has a sense of what he's doing. And I think he's just starting to figure it out. He's kind of put the curveball in his back pocket, focused mostly on a slider now. I think he has a chance to find a few more ticks in velocity. The stuff I think will get firmer overall. So I agree with your assessment there, Jim, that I think he could take a very nice step forward. You know, whether he's a top 100 type, I don't know. Pitching is so hard to predict, but I think he has all the ingredients there to be a very good starting pitcher in the big leagues eventually. And both of those guys are a little bit further away, and you know, we'll get to see both of them in the spring breakout game.
Yep, that is, as you mentioned, Jim, on Saturday against the Dodgers. And earlier in the episode, I tried to break down the number of games on each day, and I think I screwed up Friday. It's 2 games Thursday, 5 games on Friday, 7 on Saturday, and then 2 on Sunday. So tune in all week, Thursday through Sunday, for spring breakout. That's going to do it for this episode of the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Thanks very much to Cole Young for joining us, and thanks to everybody for listening. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss an episode. If you're enjoying the show or have any suggestions, leave us a rating and a review. Thanks, everybody. See you next week.